When all the acts of our daily life, even the most insignificant acts, become the living expression of the Gloria in ourselves, we will then never be sick. Master Samael Awunveyor, Occult Medicine and Practical Magic. Welcome, karate listeners, to today's broadcast on December 2nd, 2023. We are very excited to have Carly Herrero live from Maine, USA, present on her topic called The Hermetic Origin of Sickness and Healing. Carly, we're so excited to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really, really happy to be here. Thanks, Nagin. All right. So I guess without further ado, we'll just get going. So just wanted to say hello to everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in, either for this live broadcast or if you're catching the recording later. And thank you so much to the karate team and all your efforts. It's so wonderful to have this project of spreading gnosis all over the world with this radio program. So thank you so much for all your work. I really hope this talk allows us to reflect a little bit on illness and healing in a new way. And I will welcome all of your questions. At the end, we'll get a chance to do some questions. So you believe you can email the questions in to Karate Radio or go through the website and we can have some exchange at the end there. So my inspiration for this talk, initially, this actually came up pretty early in the COVID pandemic. Our friend, our brother, Christian Vallejo, was utilizing social media to bring missionaries together to do some live talks and stuff like that, which was really great because a lot of times there were classes canceled and we couldn't really do Gnostic meetings. So some of us were able to present. And I had this inspiration from reading Master Samael's Occult Medicine and Practical Magic and the teachings that he goes into on Paracelsus, five causes of illness, which we will definitely talk about on this particular lecture. So I presented kind of a shorter version of that back then in like March 2020 or maybe April 2020. And since then, you know, like maybe many of us, I've had some more reflections on illness and like sort of the complex origins of illness and healing. And I'm thinking about it a little bit differently. And so for this talk, my motivations are to delve into the following questions, like kind of questions and points. One is, how does illness occur and what should we do about it? And we're going to talk about how illness and therefore healing occurs on multiple levels, not just physical. So healing is necessary on every dimension. And then what is the purpose of health? Because health is not an end unto itself. Health is a means to an end. Health is the gift we use to serve others and to serve the being. And a sort of tricky one, how do we reconcile a yearning for excellent physical, mental, and emotional health with the demands of a process where we sacrifice everything in gnosis? Because at a certain point in the esoteric initiatic path, whether this lifetime or another lifetime, well, I mean, in this lifetime, it's necessary to make the ultimate sacrifice of death of the physical body. Of course, you know, we would do that without the initiatic path anyways, but so there's something we need to kind of reconcile there of like to sacrifice everything, in some cases sacrificing our health, and yet we yearn for excellent health. So we want to explore that a little bit. And we have to discover the balance of what to prioritize and what health really means to us. We know from the Gnostic teachings that we're in a fallen world, in bodies that are subject to the laws of karma, that were filled with psychological aggregates. And so to truly heal means to become whole through the psychological and esoteric work. And it's a simple fact that we live in an inherently imbalanced world. And it's becoming more difficult to find just simple things like nutritious food, clean water, to avoid pollutants and plastics and chemicals, etc., all of that. And I want to acknowledge that part of our karma in these times is needing to make certain efforts, you know, sometimes big efforts to not only promote our health, but sometimes just to avoid like toxins. So there's sort of that of just our karmic situation. We're going to be approaching illness and healing from different perspectives. At no point do I want to trivialize illness. I don't want to make light of the fact that illness can be a source of terrible suffering. And I hope in this talk that we can find a different perspective on the suffering and as well as some practices to overcome it. So Master Samael, he studied medicine, actually. He studied formal modern medicine, and he also studied traditional medicine. And he wrote his book, Occult Medicine and Practical Magic, as a gift to humanity to have different remedies and cures for our ailments. And he gave us the keys to practice with the masters of medicine for healing. And he gave us the keys of alchemy in order to radically transform our entire psychological and spiritual organism. So that is also what we're going to kind of go into, is just the special keys that we have for Master Samael. And in all of this, and I want us to remember this famous saying, it's attributed to the sage Confucius: the healthy man desires 1,000 things, the sick man desires only one. So let's begin by talking about physical health. As Nagin beautifully introduced this talk with this wonderful quote, I'll say it again from Occult Medicine, Practical Magic. Master Samael says, "When all the acts of our daily life, even the most insignificant acts, become the living expression of the glorion in ourselves, we will then never be sick." And so remember, the glorion is like the highest aspect of our being, very exalted part of our being. Even the most insignificant acts become a living expression of the highest part of the being in ourselves. We will never be sick. So first we want to comprehend a little bit. We want to look at a little bit the relationship between the physical body, the thoughts and emotions, and our actions. The physical body manifests the results of our thoughts, feelings, and actions. And so at this basic level, we see that our daily choices, these quote insignificant acts, what we eat, how we eat, how we breathe, how we sleep, the impressions we take in, etc., comprise our total physical health. And this is sort of the essence of the teaching of the sexual hydrogen C12, that the quality, or part of the teaching of that, I should say, that the quality of the food, the air, and the impressions we ingest become naturally concentrated in the sperm, which is the sexual substance in men and women. And the sexual substance then becomes the basis of our potential, either generative for normal sexuality, which is reproduction, or regenerative for supersexuality, which is the creation of the soul. With good food, clean water, good water, good air, and good impressions, we will create healthy sexual substance with the possibility of healthy bodies and then healthy offspring. And with, we could say, non-nutritious food, with polluted water, with polluted air, with negative impressions, heavy, kind of dark impressions that we take in, we will have more difficulties with basic physical health. And the hydrogen C12 will be of an inferior substance, regardless of what we use that substance for. There's an idea in Taoist medicine and certainly in other traditional medicine, that one's sexual health and fertility is simply an expression of one's overall health. And this seems pretty straightforward, but it's often overlooked today. The sexual hydrogen C12 will be of good, or another way of saying it is, a sexual hydrogen C12 will be of good quality based on the quality of our health. So it's interesting. There's essentially an epidemic of infertility in both men and women all over the world right now. Even when we factor in cultural elements like couples in industrial societies waiting to have children until they're older. And so, you know, it's interesting to kind of see that when the fertility, the sexual hydrogen C12, is not in good health. And that's a pretty good indicator of the state of our physical health. And then, of course, as we'll go into, the other levels of health. And the modern medical solution is synthetic hormones and so-called reproductive technologies, as if, you know, to have something as comprehensive as one's sexual health compromised is just a matter of like adding in, you know, certain synthetic substance or parts or this or that. And of course, there's lots of side effects and lots of problems because the sexual energy is so much more intelligent than we are, which you know, we know from Gnosis, the sexual energy is so intelligent. But what we need is the good nutrition, sleep, we need meditation, we need stress reduction, we need to avoid toxins, etc., to heal and nourish this hydrogen C12. And okay, so back to the physical health. So once we start to investigate our physical state, you know, our illness, our sickness, our disease, our problems here, we may find it takes more than simple physical interventions to help us. We want to look at what are the emotional and mental causes of our physical state. And this is, again, because we've already covered, like, okay, are we, you know, are we eating well, sleeping well, you know, stress reduction, that ends up covering, you know, a good amount of things. Now we're going to look a little bit deeper. What egos are present when we're engaging in the unhealthy habits, when we're addicted to stress, when we find ourselves somehow seeking or somehow unable to avoid sources of negativity that infect us with fear and anger and resentment. So, you know, a really obvious one would be like a social media and stuff like that. And of course, we all have to navigate our relationship to that. But, you know, do we find ourselves, you know, it's impossible to avoid this source of something that is causing us a lot of anxiety, a lot of, like I say, resentment, anger. So what is behind that? What is the pull? Many people today find themselves yearning for physical health, but at the same time filled with a kind of resentment that drains the energy and makes it difficult to find motivation to achieve this health. There's also situations where, sort of paradoxically, we're pouring all this time, energy, and money into health interventions, and then that can become a source of stress and imbalance. So looking into investigating our physical ailment, we may find a physical cure. That's the ideal thing. We may find the physical cure, or we may need to go deeper and discover it's coming from an emotional cause, a mental cause. And this is the, in other words, it's coming from a kind of narrative. It's coming from a story that we live with. Master Samael called this our psychological song. We may be singing a psychological song to ourselves, telling ourselves a negative story, and this keeps us sick. Going even further, we can look at causal and spiritual factors of our illness. You know, so sometimes I talk to people and they're not practicing gnosis or anything like that, but they're starting to look into the roots of their physical, their ailment, their pain, and so forth. And sometimes we start to talk about, I'll sort of use this term, the existential nature of the problem. So if people, you know, they're not religious or spiritual or something, sometimes I'll say like, wow, it really sounds kind of like an existential problem. And people are like, yeah. Like it kind of resonates. And so, you know, we want to think like, are we at odds with reality right now? Are we fighting against a situation that we can't change? And, you know, or even again, like sort of existential, like to exist on some unconscious or conscious level, do we not want to be here? And all of us face this, you know, it is just part of the nature of being to kind of grapple, I guess, with like, the difficulty of existence and reality and kind of like that. But I mean, certainly one of the gifts of Gnosis is that it brings us into the reality here and now, and we understand and can experience and live a connection to our deep origins, which gives us so much meaning and is so renewing. But sometimes, no matter what, just acknowledging that, you know, there's something more than physical. There's something more than even than mindset. There's something existential. Are we resisting reality, or are we learning to accept reality? And that can start to shift things for us. So certain situations are karmic. That, of course, would be a whole talk in and of itself. Karmic origins and so forth that can manifest in our genetics. You know, certain things can be changed. Certain things can't. This can be kind of intractable. In some cases, and certain situations in this genetics case, or sometimes just larger karmic situations, are just necessary to pass through for the development of our essence. So, you know, I alluded to a little bit earlier with the pandemic, kind of gave the initial inspiration for this talk. And there's been some other really excellent and very thorough talks on Karate Radio covering esoteric aspects of the pandemic. So I'm not going to go into that. But, you know, sort of in the end, looking back, you know, a few years later, it was just something we all had to live through, like all of us on a global level. It was sort of amazing that way. And of course, it affected many people very differently. If, you know, affected some people very profoundly, others maybe not as much, but something. And so it was just this karmic situation that everyone's essence had to live through to pay karma, to learn some lessons, and to hopefully have comprehension of just something. I mean, it rended the veil to a certain degree. We just saw so much. And so that's just an example of a kind of spiritual or causal origin of, you know, of illness. The fact that we live in the world we do with all its imbalance, disconnection from nature, disconnection from wisdom. This is also a function of karma. We know we're in times like this that are very disconnected, very disintegrated. So in these times, the most important spiritual factor, which really applies to anyone listening to this, is that our being yearns for us to awaken and to transform completely. And this yearning of our internal being means that we have to reorganize ourselves for the path. We do not merely want good physical health because we comprehend that physical health isn't an end unto itself. Physical health is a means for this vehicle to properly conduct itself in the work for humanity and the death of the ego. We do not merely want the ability to procreate or to generate because we want to regenerate, to raise the serpents of fire, of light, for our Divine Mother Kundalini to devour us completely and to give birth to the soul, and God willing, to give birth to the Christ. And just as we learn in the teachings of the four ways, that wonderful teaching from Master Gurdjieff, Master Somayel, we don't want to live completely like the fakir, the monk, or the yogi, neglecting health and balance for the certain type of spiritual development. We need balance and we need robust health, and we need to comprehend the relationship between the inner and the outer. So this process of comprehending the relationship between the inner and the outer, between our actions and our circumstances, becomes a process of reconciling the reality of being materialized in this world. The cross that we all profoundly study in this work is the intersection of the material physical life, physical circumstances, physical ailments and illness, with the internal realities of the vital, psychological, causal, conscious, ontological, and spiritual life. Reconciliation can only happen on the cross. At this intersection of material and spiritual, the two lines of life that we all learn about in these Gnostic studies. So what I mean by reconciliation, it's almost something impossible. It's like an impossible proposition to reconcile opposites, material and spiritual. And in a given moment, it can feel like we're choosing between life and spiritual pursuits. I mean, the most, you know, like just the most like simple example is like, we've got limited time. Do I meditate or go to the gym? You know, like, do I go to Gnostic class or do I stay home and cook a healthy meal? And these don't have to be at odds. I just wanted to kind of bring it down a little bit. But, you know, sometimes it can sort of feel like that. Like, but we have to reconcile on this cross where the material and the spiritual are right angles to each other. And it's only in that center, in that mathematical point in the center, in the heart, that we can truly transform the situation. So I just want to acknowledge that it is sort of an impossible situation, but that's why it's the secret path. But yeah, it takes some time in these studies and practices to begin to experience this living confluence of the spiritual yearnings and the physical needs. And then we begin to learn that that is the path itself. The path, the Christic path, it cannot occur without a physical body. And the physical body comes guaranteed with pain, limitations, and mortality. And yet the human spirit, or what we call the inner being, fills us with yearning for something more, or better said, something different. And this yearning always has to contend with our physical, mental, emotional, causal, or karmic limitations, exactly as it should, right? Because those become our lessons. Those become what we transform. It becomes our grist for the mill, so to speak, for the work. So we're in this predicament because of the sexual fall, which we know from Master Somayel occurred in ancient times in the Lemurian epoch and was a type of fatal cosmic mistake that resulted in humanity's exile from Eden. So in Genesis 3:17 through 19, it said, "And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return." So this is amazing. Genesis is just such an amazing teaching in there, but there's an interesting interpretation sort of this aspect of Adam and Eve being cast out of the garden, and it comes from the Eastern Orthodox Christian tradition from St. Gregory of Nyssa, who was one of the early church fathers, and a book that he wrote called The Life of Moses. And he goes into a little bit with the symbolism of the thorns. He says, because they say the thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. So the idea is that, again, we know from Master Somayel's teaching that Adam and Eve were humanity, all the men and the women of the Lemurian humanity. They must enter into the place filled with thorns and thistles. And this is a foreshadowing of the crown of thorns of Christ. Thorns represent a disintegration, right? Like a scattering, a fractioning, rather than one single center a center of gravity in the being and integration. With thorns, there's too many centers. There's too many points. It's like, it's disorganized. And so, you know, and that's why it's like unpredictable. You know, you walk into a thorn bush, something, and like, there's all these little points. There's all these little pokes. It's not one central, unified, sort of, principle. So this is how we are. Our consciousness is not integrated. The consciousness is disintegrated because it's got all these little points with the ego. So, you know, one little point here, one little center of gravity here and here and here and here and here. And so this is the result, the exact result of the sexual fall. And why we are not in Eden, because, or I say rather, we are not in Eden, and therefore we are in this world of thorns. Christ is crowned with the thorns, which are all of the problems of humanity, all of our problems, all of our struggles, our anger, fear, our impatience, our pride, etc., and our diseases, our illness, our sickness. And so it's the Christic process of sacrifice with love for all of humanity that can cure everything. And it's just so beautiful how it's reconciled there from the very beginning of the Old Testament into the New Testament. And, you know, and why is he crowned with the thorns? You know, it's a humiliation and all of that, of course, but it's so specific. So that's what it is. Like, that is how we reconcile this predicament. From Genesis 3:21-24, unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skin and clothe them. And the Lord God said, behold, the man is become as one of us, to know good and evil. And now lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. When humanity, again called Adam and Eve, left the Garden of Eden, which was the superior dimensions, to crystallize in Malkut, the fallen kingdom, Jehovah gave them these clothes of skin. And again, these are interesting teachings from this Eastern Orthodox tradition. This idea that the clothes of skin or the garments of skin are like a little bit of death to protect humanity in this realm that is sort of a realm of death. I mean, compared to Eden, you know, Malkut, this fallen kingdom, it's sort of in darkness. So basically, when humanity became identified with sexual sensation and materialized the divine power of sex through the sexual fall, we lost all of our spiritual powers. We lost our sacred and natural connection to the divine through awakened faculties, through fully functioning chakras, glands, and hormones. And so humanity entered this realm of entropy, of old age, sickness, and death. But God gave us these clothes of skin, which is that bit of death, to protect us from the thorns of this world, the roughness of this world, the entropy of this world. Genesis goes on, and we get to Cain, who is the descendant of that humanity of Adam and Eve. And Cain and his descendants develop technologies, tools like metal tools, metallurgy, musical instruments, and then building a city. So more and more layers of materiality building up after the clothes of skin. So technologies simultaneously provide a protection from the material physical world, but also kind of like enmesh us with it. So we find ourselves in modern times, and there's so much physical and mental imbalance, it's kind of hard to imagine a time when humanity enjoyed a natural state of health, much less a fully awakened inner life. But we can't just shed our garments of skin. We can't just eradicate all technology. We can't eradicate cities. And we can't just go back to Eden as we are. That's the thing. We have to change ourselves. We have to transform ourselves. We're already, yes, we have to have a intelligent relationship with technology. We have to have an intelligent relationship with, you know, whatever sort of, you know, I mean, yes, we live in urban environments and, you know, not connected to nature, but, you know, we want to, you know, as much as we can try to cultivate some kind of, you know, healthy connection to nature, all of this. But we can't, like I say, we can't shed our garments of skin and just go back to Eden, because we have all the thorns within us. And this is just our state. So what do we do? Well, Master Somael gives us these wonderful keys in Treatise of Revolutionary Psychology. I'm going to quote this a little bit at length because it's just so great. A few little excerpts here from Revolutionary Psychology. I highly recommend anyone who has read this before to read it again, because it's different each time. It is not irrelevant to remind our readers that a mathematical point exists within us. Unquestionably, such a point is never found either in the past or in the future. The two horizontal and vertical lines of the Holy Cross intersect at this point. Thus we find ourselves from moment to moment before two paths, the horizontal and the vertical. It is evident that the vertical is different. It is the path of intelligent rebels, of revolutionaries. When one remembers oneself and works upon oneself, when one does not become identified with all the problems and sorrows of life, it is a fact that one is traveling along the vertical path. We need to learn to live from moment to moment. For example, a person who is desperate about some sentimental, economical, or political problem has obviously forgotten his inner self. If such a person would stop for a moment, observe the situation, try to remember his inner self, and then try to understand the reason for this attitude, he would reflect a little and think that everything passes away, that life is fleeting, illusory, and that death reduces all the vanities of the world to ashes. If he would understand that his problem in reality is nothing more than a worthless flame and soon dies, he would suddenly see with great surprise that everything has changed. So in order to truly understand illness and healing for ourselves, we must understand the path back to Eden and back to our birthright as fully functioning humans. This is the Christic path, the work of death, birth, sacrifice, and love. Christ is the solution to Adam, the fallen man. Christ is the solution to Cain, the first murderer, and the first of many fratricides in the Bible. Not exclusively Jesus Christ, that great master, but also the cosmic Christ and our own intimate Christ. We have a duty to our being to fulfill his will in this body, in this particular lifetime, which requires a certain attention to physical and psychological health. At the same time, we learn to die within ourselves, to die to the most difficult thing, which is our suffering. We must be courageous enough to see our attachment to suffering, which may be really profoundly unconscious. Consciously, we want to heal. Unconsciously, we have an investment in being sick because our world is sick, and karmically, we're tied to this world. Okay, so I'm going to go into the five causes of illness, which we referenced a little bit earlier, which is a teaching from Paracelsus, a 15th century Swiss physician, alchemist, and theologian. His full name, I always love saying this, Philippus Aurelius Theophrastus Bombastus von Hohenheim, but his friends called him Paracelsus. Anyways, so Samuel Vior discusses this teaching in the introductory chapter of the book Occult Medicine and Practical Magic, and he elaborates on some of the more esoteric contexts. But first, we're going to talk about what does hermetic mean. You know, the title of this talk is The Hermetic Origins of Illness. That's, of course, related to Paracelsus as an alchemist, but, you know, go into this a little bit. So hermetic refers to the Greek god Hermes, called Mercury in Latin, and is related to the mysterious Egyptian master Hermes Trismegistus, author of a scripture called the Emerald Tablet. In The Mysteries of Life and Death, Samael says, Hermes Trismegistus, that thrice great god, the real incarnation of the god Osiris, gave us the marvelous science of alchemy. So any alchemist then will be in debt to Hermes Trismegistus. So a hermetic principle is something taught by Hermes Trismegistus, something alchemical, and is related to the functions of the alchemical and sexual mercury. One of the most famous lines from the Emerald Tablet is, as above, so below, and as below, so above. With this knowledge alone, you may work miracles. The contemporary esotericist Manly P. Hall teaches that the alchemists accomplish their apparent miracles by observing the laws of nature and then intensifying or concentrating these laws. So if nature can transform common charcoal or carbon into a precious diamond over many millions of years using heat and pressure, then the alchemist can transform what is base and common into something valuable and pure using the pressure of the consciousness and the tremendous heat of the transmuted sexual energy. From this hermetic alchemical tradition of as above, so below, we have Paracelsus, who said, man is a microcosm or a little world because he is an extract from all the stars and planets of the whole firmament, from the earth and the elements, and so he is their quintessence. This means that we're not separate from the stars and planets, the earth and the elements. We are all part of the same great system. Quintessence is the fifth element, the quality that is more than the sum of its parts, something complete. In order for a person to be the true expression of the quintessence of nature, they must know themselves, know their true nature. Paracelsus said, "Medicine is not only a science, it is also an art. It does not consist of compounding pills and plasters. It deals with the very processes of life, which must be understood before they may be guided. As the universe is made up of many different levels and dimensions, so are we. Health and sickness can occur on any of these levels. Health is to be manifest as being balanced and in the flow of the universal movement of life." Master Samael says, "There is no danger of harmful discordance if the body, soul, and mind are in perfect harmony. Illness is caused on some level by a dysfunction, a disharmony, an imbalance, an interference, or a blockage. The Buddha taught us that sickness and old age are part of life. Sickness, old age, and death are what we all must confront as long as we're on this wheel of existence. And we're always managing the inherent imbalance or disease, the dis-ease of the world of the ego. We have the ego, as we talked about, because of the fall into matter and the misuse of the sexual energy. Various illnesses, along with just the facts of old age, can be inevitable. But just as we fight to dissolve the ego and we make strong efforts to generate the soul, we can make great efforts towards good health. And we try to comprehend the causes of our particular illness and suffering. So in order to have a remedy or a cure for an illness, there must be a diagnosis. If we apply the wrong remedy because of a misdiagnosis, then the remedy won't work or will make things worse. The word diagnosis comes from dia or dia, which means apart, separate, discern, and then gnosis, of course, which is knowledge, to know. So to diagnose means to know through discernment, to rule out extraneous information to get to the root. Once the root cause is discerned and a diagnosis is made, then the remedy can be applied. So simple example, there's pain in the body. The pain can be from any number of physical causes. You know, it could be a muscle tension, it could be an injury, it could, you know, all sorts of things. It could be more originating from an imbalance of vitality, a misuse of the energies that which drains us, and we have a pain. The pain could be from an emotional or spiritual like disconnection or a rift, a disconnection from our true nature, from the center, from our being. And then the body is trying to cope with this spiritual or emotional pain with a physical symptom. All of this happens all the time. You know, there's even just in modern medicine, there's sort of a, you know, certain kinds of like heart disease. They'll talk about it as like heartbreak syndrome. You know, when people have experienced a great loss, like a, you know, loss of a spouse or something like that. There's, you know, certain kinds of like heart illnesses that can occur. And it's just such a pattern that even like modern doctors will say, oh, it's heartbreak syndrome. So these kinds of things, you know, can happen. So like, you know, the question of where is our pain coming from is a pretty profound question. If this original cause is more subtle, originating in a more subtle body, a more subtle cause, like we're saying, it can be a little bit more challenging to make a proper diagnosis. There's some really interesting practices that Master Samael gives in occult medicine and practical magic, in terms of tools that the Gnostic medic can use. And one of them is, well, he basically says in order to really being able to truly diagnose, the medic must have clairvoyance. And so he says, in order for one to exactly diagnose a sickness, clairvoyance is necessary. Every sickness has its causes within the interior universe of the human being. Thus, in order to penetrate within this profound interior universe, one needs to be clairvoyant. Yeah, and he gives a really interesting description of a clair telescope and actually how to make it. So that'll be one of the tools of the medic and a way to actually harness clairvoyance or develop clairvoyance with this kind of machine to properly diagnose. It's very interesting. Samael goes on. He says, Freud tried to approach this reality with his psychoanalysis. However, he did not delve into it completely because he lacked the development of his clairvoyance or sixth sense. The diagnosis by percussion and auscultation is already very antiquated. Consequently, a major amount of doctors are abandoning it. And so so percussion and auscultation, that's like tapping and listening. And it's true, like doctors nowadays, they don't even, you know, touch the patient at all sometimes or give a physical examination. But, you know, Master Samael is saying that, you know, that's inadequate. But he goes on to discuss iridology, which is diagnosis by looking at the iris of the eye, and curology, which is looking at the lines of the hand, and how these are very difficult to diagnose by. I do sometimes wonder what Master Samael would think about medicine today, where doctors diagnose almost exclusively through blood tests and imaging, sometimes even diagnosing through exploratory surgery, and without, like I say, without even doing sometimes a physical exam on the patient, without even listening Sometimes not even seeing the patient with, you know, in with their own eyes, or even listening to their symptoms and stuff like that. So you know, Samael was criticizing medicine many, many decades ago, and rightly so. And it's gotten much more, I would say, technological oriented, disconnected at certain losses. But the keys that Samael gives for diagnosis and for healing in that book are just wonderful. Okay, so this is in regards to the Claire telescope. He says, the Gnostic medic will take the sick person into his healing sanctuary. Then with his sixth sense and with the help of his Claire telescope, he will perform the corresponding exam of the organism. Thus, he will give an exact diagnosis. So the diagnosis, the discernment is very important. Otherwise, we are kind of just going in blind and, you know, what is the right remedy? Like, how can we know? Cures or remedies can be on different levels. It can be physical, so it can be taking medicine. It can be removing the damaged tissues, damaged fluids, basically surgery, right? It can be different kinds of, you know, prescriptions, avoid certain environmental factors, etc. The remedy can be psychological. We can heal ourselves through performing an act of generosity. We can heal ourselves through acknowledging grief. We can heal so much by forgiveness, letting go of anger, letting go of resentment. Spiritual sickness can be cured with prayer, with ritual, and with other practices. Health is maintained by being in a balanced relationship with ourselves, with the rhythms of nature, with our community, our family, our society, and with God. A disconnection from any of these aspects results in the sickness. And as we're talking about remedies, we have to talk about dosage. Paracelsus has the famous quote, "All things are poison, for there is nothing without poisonous qualities. It is only the dose which makes a thing a poison." So whenever we're talking about health and remedies, we have to understand dosage. More is not necessarily better, and it's actually possible to have too much of a good thing. So whatever intervention we're doing, again, talking physically, we could be drinking water. It's possible to drink too much water. Obviously, it's possible to not drink enough water. You know, exercising is great, but what's the right dosage? Supplements can be helpful. What's the right dosage? Medication, etc. We need to know the dosage, and we also need to know when to stop. You know, on the spiritual level, the spiritual practices is something that we can and definitely should maintain our whole lives. But certain spiritual practices, we have to kind of acclimate ourselves to a higher dosage. If we've been working with transmutation, maybe we've been working with transmutation for a while, and maybe we remember early on it was something we had to acclimate to. Sexual alchemy is it's a healing practice, but it's something we have to acclimate to. Runic practices, mystical death practices, night vigil work, you know, sacrificing our sleep to wake up in the night and to pray and to work, that's something that has to acclimate. I'll speak from my experiences, not something that was easy, not that it's easy now, but it was like practically felt impossible when I first started to do it. And many, many years now, it's something that I take refuge in. So it's dosage. Yeah, so we want to make these efforts, make the right kind of effort in our cures, and then pay attention to the results, right? This is, you know, science is one of the pillars of Gnosis. So this is where the science comes in. Like, let's be objective. Let's look. Something didn't work. Okay, let's try something else. Let's, you know, do we have an exact diagnosis? Do we, you know, what are the results? Is it working? Great. Okay.